Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant seated directly across from me. Within almost arm's reach is Jerry Rowland seated to my right, and I'm seated right here at my axis in the center of my own being. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, in person a dish. First time since the
1980.
The one time 3D audio experience experiment.
Oh boy, I forgot about that. I marked it out of my head.
That's the only time we've been in the same room to record since COVID. Was that?
Is that right?
That those two episodes. I don't even remember the second one. I remember the first one. It was the
Ivy League
Harvard thing.
Yeah, because Ivy League and 3D audio are just like. It's such low-hanging fruit, you know?
Yeah, but we're back because, you know, I put it on my Instagram. The studio is going away. We're moving house.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, to me at least, you said, hey, guys, I'd really like to record in there together one more time.
Why is that so surprising?
I don't know. You don't seem overly sentimental about stuff like this.
That's not true. I weep a lot.
Yeah, but not about studio rooms.
No. I mean, I'll miss this particular room.
Okay. Me too. I mean, this has been, I mean, I think like seven of the most solid years we've ever had been in right here.
Pretty solid, although the corner office with moving blankets as sound bafflers was a pretty solid couple years too.
The quaint early days. I drove by that building the other day too, and for the first time in forever.
Yeah.
In Buckhead, and I was just like, ugh.
Do you remember there was like, for some reason, every time we recorded at like 1:30 when we had just started to get going, a fire truck would go right outside.
Yeah.
Every day, same time.
Yeah.
It's like they knew.
Oh, the memories.
So that's enough fun for now, Chuck, because we're talking about interest rates, all right?
I don't know why I picked this. I mean, I do know why, but I'm so not good at this stuff.
So I can imagine an AP economics like teacher picking this for their high school class. So I think that's kind of like a public service you've done here.
Well, I picked it because, you know, the Fed just raised the rate by it was half of a point, right?
Yeah, biggest hike since 2000.
Yeah, so I saw that biggest hike and I was like, oh my gosh, what was it, 20, 30? Right. It was a half a point and I was like, I don't understand this, so I might as well learn it enough to tell other people a little bit about it.
Do you understand now?
Yeah.
Like that half of a percent is actually a pretty big deal.
It is, and I understand now more than ever there's like nine people that just control the economy of the United States.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that half of a percentage point, as you'll see by the time we're done with this, everybody, is basically the Fed going, ish.
Yeah.
They're really kind of nervous right now.
Sure.
And what they're going for by raising that interest rate is to cool off the economy. We have inflation rates that haven't been seen since 1981.
Yeah.
Not a good time for inflation.
No.
And I mean, we're talking the Great Recession was in there too, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a big deal, the inflation that we're seeing right now. So the Fed is saying, okay, we have an economy that is overheating. Like, you want some inflation, as we'll see, but this is way too much inflation.
Yeah.
The prices of, like, everything is going through the roof. People are getting really mad. We better do something about it. But what they're trying to do by raising the interest rates is to create a soft landing so that prices come down, but they don't affect productivity and employment. That's the big thing.
Man.
And Ben Bernanke put it once, back when he was still just a Fed governor rather than the chair. He said basically that what they were doing was like driving a car. I'm paraphrasing here.
This is going to scare everybody, isn't it?
Yes, probably. Yeah. He said the Fed, basically what the Fed does is like driving a car with fogged up windshield,
okay,
a faulty speedometer.
No good.
And a brake pedal and accelerator that when you press it, the car has a very significant delay before it responds.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a brake and an accelerator that just switch positions without letting you know which is which.
And it's on fire. And there's monkeys everywhere and they're angry.
Yeah, the delay, sure, because none of these none of these moves, it's an immediate impact. And it's sort of a fingers crossed behind your back kind of move.
Yeah.
Almost always.
Yeah. And so most people who are watching this are saying the Fed waited too long because they kept the economy juiced for years and years and years. It just kept getting hotter and hotter. And everybody was very happy until prices started going up.
Right.
So they waited too long. So a lot of people who know what they're talking about say there's a recession coming pretty soon. So batten down the hatches.
Right. Key indicators, as they say.
Right. So what does all this have to do with interest rates, Chuck? Let's wrap.
Well, I mean, this is we'll get to the Fed, but this is generally about interest rates. The good news is everything else about interest rates is pretty basic. We are a nation and in a lot of ways a world that operates on loans and interest and borrowing money, and then banks borrow money from each other, and then the Fed lends money to banks, and it's a weird thing. It's a weird world economy,
right,
that has been created over the past several hundred years in this country.
There's a lot of shiny suits. People will break your arms.
Yeah.
That's basically what it's all based on.
Sure, but it's all based on the fact that if you want to buy something as a person, and, you know, we're focusing on the United States here, and you don't have the money, it's no big deal because you can get credit cards if you want to pay large interest rates. You can get a home loan or a car loan because not everyone can shell out, you know, 20 to 50 grand for a car or however much houses cost now, $8 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's risk involved anytime you lend money, and depending – all of it really comes down to the risk of the loan as – according to what the interest rate's going to end up being.
Right. So what we're talking about now are interest rates on the micro level, like the you and me level, like you're saying, house buying, car buying, credit cards, all that stuff. And it's really basic, like you were saying, where with interest rates, if you go to get a loan, say, they're going to look at a few things.
Like what are you going to buy?
I'm going to buy a really cool vintage Poison t-shirt on eBay.
Okay. It's like 15 grand.
Easily. I want to borrow some money to get that t-shirt.
That's right.
So they're going to look at my – whoever I borrow from is going to look at my my credit score, especially if it's a unsecured debt, right?
Yeah, unsecured debt is basically any kind of credit card debt because they can't come and take away anything, basically.
They're not going to take my Poison shirt if I default on the loan.
They should.
The way that they get you is they affect your credit.
Right.
But I still get to keep the Poison shirt, so who's the sucker here?
Right, as opposed to a secured debt, which is you got like a home mortgage because they can come and take that.
Right. So getting back to interest rates then, that would mean that since the bank that lent you the money to buy your home can legally seize your home because it's a secured debt.
Yeah, it's collateral.
They're going to charge you less because at the end of the day, if you default, they can take your house. Mm-hmm. The credit card is going to charge you a higher interest rate because at the end of the day, if you default, they can't take that Poison shirt. So they're going to charge more. And the reason that there's a difference in charging more or less is because the entire point of interest is that's the price you're paying for somebody to loan you money in exchange for them taking a risk, because there's always a risk that you're going to not pay it back. Even if you have great credit, something could happen. You could break bad or something like that. Who knows? But there's always a risk, and that's what interest is. It's the money they make for loaning you that money and taking that risk.
That's right. And it's a little – it's not counterintuitive, but it kind of works both ways, because if you have the collateral of, like, let's say a home mortgage and they can take that house, that's going to be a much lower interest rate, like you said, than the credit card. But it's also going to be higher in some ways because it's a long-term loan. If it's, you know, it's kind of a negative outlook, but I think that banks look at people and say, well, if you have a 30-year home mortgage, like, I don't know what you're going to be doing in 27 years. Like, you may be broke. You may be destitute. You may be in the hospital and have no money anymore.
Right.
So that's going to be a little higher, which is why if you can, like people always, I mean, financial people, I'm not one of those, but they always recommend you like refi your house and bring it down to a 15-year loan because it's less risky and it'll be a little bit less of an annual percentage rate.
Right. And then one of the other reasons, if you've ever looked at a house or gotten a mortgage, there's a big difference between the rate you're charged for a 15-year and a 30-year, not just because there's a longer chance for you to default on the loan, but also because over the course of 30 years, inflation's going to actually eat into the amount of money you pay that bank back because it's going to depress the value of the dollar over time.
Right. So when that bank is getting your 100, what's left on your 100 grand 25 years from now, it's not going to be the same as the value of that dollar now.
Right. So there's actually two types of interest that you pay on, say, like a 30-year mortgage or even a 15-year mortgage. And that is the nominal rate, which is the rate you agree to, say 10%, which is astronomical. Don't ever take a home loan out with a 10% mortgage interest on it.
Right.
Okay. That's just a tip from me. But over time, as inflation grows, let's say over that 15 years, inflation grows a total of like 4%, you're actually paying the bank back, or they're actually getting back the value equal to about 6% of what they lent you.
And what's that called?
That is the real interest rate, right?
That's right.
Okay, I remember.
Wake up, everybody, by the way.
Yeah. Cacao!
All right. And by the way, Jerry's eating over there, and there's just nothing more normal and relaxing than us sitting in a room and Jerry chomping down next to us. I just wanted to acknowledge that. It's kind of nice.
It is nice. She's not eating miso, though, this time. It's the only thing missing from this.
You know, most people fall asleep to, like, white noise or the sound of the ocean. I have one of just Jerry chewing.
Yeah.
Puts me right to bed.
That's nice.
All right. So I guess that's, like, just the basic overview of how regular interest rates work. It's really easy. It's very basic.
Yeah, it's the price you pay to borrow money rather than saving up to spend it
later. Yeah, but no one cares about that stuff because you try and get your credit card rates down. You try and have good credit. And if you buy a house, you try and get the best rate you can. And then it's all kind of said and done. But what everyone sits up and takes attention is when the Federal Reserve – and by the way, if you ever want to just send me into traffic, we should just do a whole podcast on the Fed.
I don't understand why they talk the way they do.
I know.
Like they're – purposefully obtuse, I think. Like, it's really hard. Like, you can just read
a sentence. They're gaming the whole system, so they just want everyone to be nice and sleepy.
I guess so.
When they're talking.
It's just nuts, man.
So when the chairperson of the Federal Reserve sits up and says, all right, we think we're going to raise some interest rates. And by the way, banks, they try to know before they even make that announcement because they're always watching the chairperson of the Fed and like, what did they have for breakfast this morning?
Right.
How are they feeling today?
Yeah.
And that's why the recent 0.5% adjustment was just such a big deal because it can have a really immediate and long-term effect, which is kind of weird because immediately, like, stocks are going to do all kinds of crazy things. And then it's got this long-term effect that they hope is going to work out. But it doesn't always because it's not an exact science.
Yeah, a really good example of that goes back to bank mortgages, right? So banks, I'm sure they carry out their own research as well to predict what's going to happen in the future because they want to set their mortgage rates, their 30-year mortgage rates today with as close a forecast of what's going to happen with inflation over the next 30 years as they possibly can because they want to squeeze out every real penny that they can from you, from your loan, right?
That's like crystal ball stuff, though, you know?
It is, but I mean, I think they've gotten kind of good at it, but it's still, at the end of the day, just an educated guess. Mm-hmm. One of the things they do is watch what the Fed's doing. Is the Fed raising interest rates? Are they raising interest rates? Does that mean that they think inflation is going up? And if inflation's going up, then we need to adjust our mortgage loans, right?
Right.
That's pretty simple, but it just keeps going from there.
Yeah.
So if mortgage rates increase, home buying slows, housing prices drop, that means new houses are being built less frequently, which means there's fewer carpenters being put to work.
Right.
That means there's less fewer wood. Lumber mills yeah. creating lumber for those houses. So mm-hmm. those people are out of work. Those people are out of work. They're starting to default on their rent or their mm-hmm. mortgages. And foreclosures start to go up, which further depresses the housing value or the housing market because a flood of houses start to come on the market because of foreclosures because banks want to offload them. Just from the Fed saying we might
right.
increase by a quarter of a percent
yeah.
our interest rate.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the kind – that's what's at stake.
I know.
When they're speaking out in public or even like making moves, you
yeah.
know, like without speaking at all.
Yeah, it's pretty scary and precarious. The Fed itself – and like I said, maybe we'll do – I guess we have to at some point
mm-hmm.
on the Fed. But just as a broad overview, the Federal Reserve is the central bank of the U.S. There are 12 regional – Federal Reserve banks and a 7-member board. I talked about, I don't know if I said 7 people,
mm-hmm.
but a 7-member board of governors in D.C. And it was created in 1913 to, you know, ideally stabilize and secure our economy because at the time it was sort of the Wild West when it comes to banking.
Yeah, there were a lot of bank panics actually
yeah,
where people
that's
would
no good.
Make a run on a bank and the bank would be like, we don't have any more money and they would go under and like people would lose their entire savings.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a pretty brilliant creation. And one of the things, the Fed does a lot, but one of the things the Federal Reserve does is it has a lot of cash and it helps supply the banks that you and I bank at with cash reserves and maybe let's take a break. That's a good cliffhanger.
Okay.
And we'll talk about the fact that banks, by law, have to keep certain amounts of money, and it gets even more boring. So
I can't believe this cliffhanger.
D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Okay, Chuck, before we get into reserve requirements of banks, I have a pretty neat little story, actually.
Oh, yay.
We were talking about banking panics, and there was one back in 1882, or at least there was one bank that went under, and they had a branch in Sacramento that a guy named Louis Remy, I'm going to say, went to go get his $12,000 that he'd saved up, which is about like $350,000 in today's money. It was like his nest egg, right? Yeah. He went to go get it out and was told that the bank had failed and they didn't have his money. So you know what Louis Remy did? He got on a horse and he rode from Sacramento to Portland, Oregon, 665 miles.
That's a long ride.
In 6 days.
Okay.
He rode for 143 hours. 10 of those was to stop to sleep.
Oh, I thought I was going to say to get a new horse.
He did that like in an instant, right? So for 6 days, he slept 10 hours to ride to Portland, got there before the steamership that was carrying news of the bank collapse down in Sacramento.
Yeah.
So he was racing the steamer, got there an hour or two before the steamer, got his $12,000 out of the Portland branch of the bank, and like within an hour or two of that bank collapsing, finding out that there was no more bank anymore.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm glad his flux capacitor was working.
Basically, that's basically what he did, but the horse version of that.
Man, yeah, he said, oh, I should give myself an hour. That should be plenty of time.
Right, exactly.
I never understand that in time travel movies.
I don't either.
It's like, go back the week before. Take your time.
Just take it easy. Maybe get like a snack. You have time.
All right, so we promised the scintillating details of the fact that banks have to keep a certain amount of money in their reserves, and that is because, you know— it's not the 1800s. Not everyone's going to say, oh, I got to go to that Chase Bank and withdraw every penny all at the same time.
Right.
But they got to be protected against that.
Oh, it could happen, though.
Sure.
The problem is once a panic starts, it spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
Because that means, well, if these people are panicking, even though I'm not panicking, I better go to the bank anyway to get my money out before it collapses, before more of these idiots panic and take their money out.
Right.
So whether you're panicked or not, it actually makes sense if there's a panic and a run going on in your bank to go withdraw, and it's just this chain reaction that starts. So the Fed protects against that by requiring that these banks have these reserves, right?
Yes. So it's known as the reserve requirement. It's based on a percentage of all the deposits in that bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple calculation. And then these banks – have to have non-interest-bearing accounts at the Federal Reserve to make sure the Federal Reserve can cover everything.
Right, to make sure that it's like, okay, you have to have this much. We're going to hang on to it for you.
That's right. So they're taking this average every day, but it's an average over 2 weeks,
right,
basically, to determine whether or not it's meeting that reserve requirement. And here's the thing that, I don't know, I guess it sort of surprised me, is banks, depending on what's going on a day-to-day basis, are borrowing and lending money to each other.
Well, yeah.
To cover themselves.
Yes. So
that sounds frightening, but it makes sense.
So they've got like a pile of money, and whatever money they have, they can make more money if they lend that money out, if they put it to work, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they want to do, is to get more interest.
So if on one day they're like, oh, we've lent out more than we have in reserve, mm-hmm. we go to another bank that has an excess
right.
and borrow it from them. And then we put it in our Fed account and everything's fine. We're within the legal limits for those reserve requirements.
Right. But if they run out of, you know, banks to trade with basically at the end of the day, mm-hmm. then they can go to the Fed and say, Big Mama, we need a little money from you actually.
Right. And the Fed doesn't like that. So they actually charge banks more for the to borrow money directly from the Fed for overnight requirements.
That's right.
But it's ironically called the discount rate, even yeah. though it's the larger of the two rates. The other rate where a bank borrows from another bank overnight to satisfy the Fed's reserve requirements, that's called the federal funds rate.
Right.
The I answered
Fed
my own
funds rate. I thought you were waiting on me. And within that discount rate, there are a few different tiers, kind of just like you would scale or a tier any loan. You've got your primary rate, which is the lowest one, and that's, you know, if you're a great bank in good standing, you're going to get that rate.
Right.
You got the secondary rate, and that's by the way, is Dave Ruse, but from HowStuffWorks.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave said slightly less sound institutions.
Right, Galloping Gulch State Bank.
Yeah, probably. And then you've got your seasonal rate. And these are very small banks that are based sort of around seasonal economies like tourism or agriculture or something like that.
Yeah, because like when it comes time to bring in the crops for harvest, all yeah. the farmers come and say, I need some money to get this stuff to market. I need loans. And those banks get strained at those times.
Yeah, or there's lots of great, I feel, old-timey heist movies where someone will, you know, like – during crop season, they'll know a bank will have just be flooded with cash on a certain afternoon.
Yeah, what? There's a movie you're talking about.
I think Raising Arizona, that was definitely the case.
Okay, was that it?
But
Wisdom?
It's been in other movies, too.
With Emilio Estevez?
Was that a bank robber movie?
He was like a Robin Hood where I think he robbed banks to get rid of the deeds so that the farmers couldn't have their farms foreclosed.
I never saw that. I know the movie you're talking about, though.
I saw it.
Wisdom.
I saw it. Hey, while we're talking about movies, I've been meaning to give a shout out to – so our friend Toby?
Yeah, yeah.
His production company made a movie called The Green Knight that slipped under the radar.
Not for me, buddy. I saw it in the theater.
Wasn't that an amazing movie?
It is, and one of the most like – just sort of like in a day and time where everything is a Marvel movie or something.
Right.
To have something so original based on like an ancient tale.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was. So David Lowery's the director.
Yeah, that's
and
his
he
partner.
Is just a straight up auteur.
Yeah.
He's just making the movies that he wants to make.
Yeah.
And their production company's called Sailor Bear, I think.
I was so mad that got snubbed at the Oscars.
It's crazy. It's
for
a
at
really
least
good
like
movie.
Cinematography and mm-hmm. set design and costumes. Like it got nothing. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think A24 picked it up.
Yeah, which is.
Which means their yeah. streak of. Like
amazing movies.
Yes, flawless. Yeah. It's a flawless streak. They haven't stumbled once in the entire.
I think you're right.
The entire history of A24.
Yeah, come at me if you got a bad A24 movie. Let's hear it.
It's not. You know what I hear? Crickets.
Is there a movie called Crickets?
Maybe.
Okay.
There's a movie out there called Egg, from the '60s.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, though. I just read about it in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader.
I thought you were talking about the movie Head, the Monkees movie.
Yeah, the Monkees, right? Where they tried to do the whole smile thing.
Oh, really?
I think so. It was kind of their answer to the Beach Boys smile.
Oh, interesting. All right. Can we just keep talking about that stuff?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Let's get back on this. The Fed funds rate. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about that's the rate that banks charge one another to borrow overnight to satisfy the reserve requirement.
Right, and this is the one that is just very simple supply and demand. If there are if there's a lot of cash in a lot of banks, then the rate is going to be lower. If there's demand for more money, mm-hmm. then it's going to be higher. The Fed controls all of this.
In a roundabout way.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of control all of it in a roundabout way.
In like almost
all of the economy.
Like a Rube Goldberg mousetrap kind of way. Like it'd be so much easier if they were like, this is what you guys can charge one another as an interest rate.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. They let the market decide. They set a target and then let the market work and then they manipulate the market.
That's right. So if the Fed wants to lower that funds rate, it's going to buy securities from those banks.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more cash on hand all mm-hmm. of a sudden. If they want to raise the funds rate, They're going to sell government securities, which are, I mean, anytime you start talking debt instruments, I just go a little crazy with excitement. Right. But government securities are just debt instruments. They're used to fund government operations. Mm-hmm. It's basically so, like, the way I understood it was if, like, a lot of it is military spending and operations, and it just keeps them from having to, like, raise and lower taxes a lot because they want to keep taxes kind of stable.
Right. So, yeah. So with all that deficit spending, what they're doing is if the government could operate just on the taxes, tax revenue it brings in,
right,
it would be – it'd be neutral. It wouldn't be operating at a deficit. There wouldn't be any profit. It'd be great.
Yeah.
But it spends more money than it takes in, so it has to issue that debt, which is basically loans in the form of treasury bills. And that's what the Fed is doing when they're out there buying or selling treasury bills, these mm-hmm. debt securities. They're taking debt in or out of the market. They're adding cash into or out of the market. And it's not like banks who trade with – it's just a very select elite group of what are called primary dealers who buy and sell these treasury bills with the Fed.
Yeah.
They don't have a choice in this. If you want to be a primary dealer, you have to buy or sell depending on what the Fed wants to do at any given time, right?
Yeah.
And so by doing that, they say, all right, we want to buy a bunch of treasury bills because we want to inject cash into the market.
Mm-hmm.
Here, like, sell those to us. Here's the cash. And by the way, we're not actually giving you this cash to go do anything with. This cash goes into your Federal Reserve account.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, and this is really important, Chuck, that account is non-interest bearing.
Right.
It makes 0 cents in both sense of the word to leave money in there when you as a bank could make some money off of it loaning it to other banks.
Right.
So the more money that the Fed has put into those accounts, the more money there is to loan, meaning that interest rate drops. And this is all so arcane. And again, this is like a dozen people who deal with this on a day-to-day basis. But it has a ripple effect in that when you lower the federal funds rate, those banks in turn end up lowering their rates to people like you and me. It has a cascading effect throughout the economy.
Yeah. Like, I think I used to look at the Fed rate and when they would move that and think that's the home mortgage loan rate.
Essentially, it translates into that.
It does in a certain way for sure. But I thought the Fed sort of set that until last week when I
same
started
here.
Researching
yeah,
this.
Same here, yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's passed along on, you know, like you said, both ways, either in better interest rates or worse interest rates for everything across the board for regular schmoes like us.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, I mean, you can also buy, you know, we'll talk about inflation in the stock market, which is where I get really confused. But remember how I was talking about, like, the interest rates have to do with nothing but risk, basically.
Right.
If you want to buy, if you want to get out of the stock market and just say, I'm only going to invest in, like, bonds and things like that and securities, then you're not going to make much money. The return on those is very, very low because they're government backed, which means the risk is very, very low.
Right.
People play the stock market because ideally you can get like 8% more money every year that you're doing it.
Whereas you're making like half of a percent off of like a bond
exactly.
or something.
And that's the same way, like, you know, you make interest when you have money in the bank because the bank wants to use your money.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of taking a loan from you every day.
Right.
You just don't realize it, but you get just a tiny – that's why it doesn't pay to just keep a ton of money in the bank because you're making a tiny amount there too.
Yeah. And so the federal funds rate has an effect on that as well. Right. In the real world with the stock market. So if the Fed takes a bunch of money out of the market and floods the market with treasury bills.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Those treasury bills are easy peasy to come by, which means that they're worth less, which means that people are going to get less money from investing in them, which means they're going to turn to the stock market.
Right.
Because you're going to make more money.
Right.
Right. Even though it's riskier, that juices the stock market when interest rates are low. When interest rates are high, meaning the Fed has soaked up a bunch of money, and they have sold a bunch of those like treasury bills, that means – yeah, I think I'm right.
It's easy to get
that
confused.
Means that the interest rate has gone up, which means that you can get more money from those treasury bills, which makes the stock market less attractive to people who are investing in it, which usually signals a cooler economy.
That's right. And I guess the final effect here before we break and then talk about inflation, which is so fun, is if the Fed lowers the funds rate, it's going to decrease the value of the dollar on the exchange market, on the foreign exchange market. And that is it's a little counterintuitive, but a little bit of a – like a long-term drop like the is not good. You don't want the dollar to decrease and stay low. But on the short term, on the near term, it can be good for the American economy because if the dollar drops – then our money's not going to be worth as much elsewhere. So buying things like products or goods or services from overseas, it's going to be more expensive. So they might turn to the home front to buy some of those goods and services, which can actually inject, like kind of supercharge the local American economy on the near term.
Right. And so that actually can in turn lead to inflation accidentally. So if you have low interest rates, that means that money is abundant and cheap. Borrowing is cheap. A lot of people are out spending because interest rates are low. So the dollar is actually deflating, which means that prices are going up, right? In some cases, like this is actually good. The Fed wants to keep inflation at about 2% growth per year.
Yeah.
So prices are going up. And the reason why the Fed would want to do that, as we'll see, is because they're if you know that prices are going to generally continue going up, you're going to buy something today rather than putting it off for later.
Right. They love you spending money.
Right.
That's what they want is Americans buying things constantly.
Exactly. But you so you want prices to go up but at a steady rate and a manageable rate.
Yeah.
The problem is if you if money becomes too abundant in the economy, prices start to go up really quick because a lot of people have money, but there's not enough supply to satisfy that demand.
That's right.
Which drives prices up even further, which is pretty much the situation that we find ourselves in now.
Right.
So to deal with this, the Fed has raised interest rates in the hope that it becomes more expensive to borrow money.
Right.
People will spend less, and then it becomes more lucrative to save money because interest rates for like loans or for CDs, for savings accounts, all that stuff goes up, right? And so you're spending less, prices hopefully come down, but not so much that people start to get laid off because consumer demand has bottomed out.
That's right.
That's where we're at right now. This is the tightrope that we're watching the Fed kind of transverse right now.
That's right. They're on a penny farthing on a tightrope.
Yeah, with a little tiny umbrella that's comically small.
Comically small. All right, well, let's take our final break. And we'll finish up with a little bit on inflation and how the interest rate continues to affect that right after this.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
So I have a feeling, I'm trying to think of the Stuff You Should Know audience right now.
Okay.
All of our friends out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that 90% of them will not hear this part.
Okay.
The ones in that 90% that managed to stick this one out are probably like, I'm sort of learning this, guys, but it's really confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 10% are economists and people that are sitting back and laughing and going, nope, they got that part wrong.
Right.
No.
Wrong again.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I feel like if you took all of the information in this episode and cut and pasted into a more coherent way.
That's Jerry's job.
It would be like we got it.
Yeah.
I think we just explained it in a really confusing way.
Probably so. We're a little all over the place. All right. So we talked a little bit about inflation, that inflation is good in a slow and steady way. Mm-hmm. Would you say 2% a year?
Yeah, that's what the Fed shoots for.
Shoots for 2%. No inflation at all is not good, because that means you're looking at deflation. We talked about stagflation in one of those a long time ago.
What is stagflation?
Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so stagflation is no good. I think that's when the rate is above like a certain percentage and unemployment is below a certain percentage. And there's one other indicator.
Productivity, I think, maybe declines.
Maybe.
So prices remain high and keep going higher.
Yeah.
But the wages are tumbling and people are getting laid off and like the economy is starting to cool, but prices are staying high.
Yeah, because ideally with inflation, wages are kind of going up in lockstep.
Yeah.
Like that's what you want.
That's what you want, ideally. Right. I don't know the last time that actually happened,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So you do want some inflation, but you don't want too much inflation is the upshot of it.
And that's right.
A lot of – we also did one on inflation too. It was I can't remember what the name of it, but it was just this past like June, I think. I looked
at it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So there's a couple of explanations about how inflation works, and I don't know that one's necessarily right and the other's wrong. I think it just depends on the context.
Yeah, or the way you're looking at it, it seems like.
But they both seem really familiar. So I think we talked about them in the inflation episode. We would have had to have. But one is called the demand pull theory. And that's kind of the explanation for what's going on right now, that because of government stimulus checks, because of productivity being through the roof, mm-hmm. because interest rates being really low, the economy has been awash in easy money.
Yeah.
And people are buying, spending, buying. A lot of people have a lot of money and are ready to spend it. Also, I think there was a lot of probably pent-up demand from hanging around your house
because
of COVID. And now you're like, oh, take my money. I want to do something interesting. You know, I'm so bored.
Yeah, it's unprecedented stuff these past couple of years. I don't think anyone really knew what the overall effect was going to be.
Right. So the tightrope, if you look closely, is actually a ultra-sharp razor blade that the Fed is on thanks to this unprecedented event that we've just gone through
that
they're trying to deal with. So the idea of a bunch of people having a bunch of money, wanting everything all at once, from houses to cars to, you know, Game Boys, maybe.
Sure. They still are
vintage Game Boys.
Okay.
To Poison T-shirts.
Uh-huh.
Like, that means that we're all competing with one another for the finite supply of those things, which means that people selling them, thanks to just supply and demand, basic, you know, capitalism and economics, those prices rise.
That's right.
That's inflation. That's the demand pull theory.
That's right. The other is cost push. And this is basically kind of the opposite of that in some ways. It's the cost of doing business is going up. It is sort of separated from demand in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of reasons this might happen. Dave mentioned a couple that like labor unions might have to pay people a lot more money because they negotiated a new contract or something. Exporting foreign goods shoots through the roof or something. Or maybe there's a new administration, all of a sudden there's new taxes going on. But basically, it's cost push because the rise in cost of doing that business, any business, is going to push the price of the products higher and higher and higher.
Right. But it has nothing to do with demand necessarily. It's just
– no.
It's become – the cost of doing business has become more expensive.
Right. And now this is where – like I did pretty good with this stuff until interest rates affecting inflation, because it seemed – I don't know. It just seemed so rigged and like – I hate saying that word now.
But that's the whole – that's the whole thing. That's the entire point of what the Fed is doing by raising that interest rate by 0.5%.
Manipulated, I guess.
They're trying to manipulate the economy, and they're trying to do it in just the right way so that they can keep those inflation – keep inflation – slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
They can keep it in check, but at the same time, they don't want to bring prices down so much that businesses have less incentive to produce goods, right? Because right now with prices really high, businesses are doing everything they can to get out as many widgets as possible because they can sell them for historically high prices right now. If prices fall, eventually you get to a point where businesses are like, it's not really worth the investment. I don't need this many people to make this many widgets anymore.
Start laying people off. Right.
So unemployment starts to go up. And all of a sudden, you've overstepped. You've cooled the economy too much by adjusting or by targeting inflation, by adjusting the interest rate. That's the precarious position that they're in right now. They're trying to create that soft landing to get prices back down to a normal rate of inflation without cooling off the economy inadvertently.
That's right. And what I meant to look up to see, is it always by quarters of a point?
No. I mean, they just did 0.5 point.
No. But that's 2 quarters.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Is there ever an increment that's less than that?
Not that I've ever seen.
Okay. So they go a quarter at a time?
I feel like.
Or half or 3 quarters.
Yeah. I think the most I saw was 1.75 or something like that.
Really?
And that was back in 2000. I think. So the last time they had such a huge hike as a 0.5%, it was actually like 2.75%.
Oh, wow.
Because I think of the dot-com bubble.
Right.
And they probably overstepped because there's a recession after that.
Right. And then the housing situation.
Yeah, that came later.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was – I'm sure all of that is affected. All the tendrils affect one another.
I'm sure. I think there was somebody who had a theory that every recession was connected to the last one somehow.
Well, they say we're headed for one. Since the 1950s, there are economists that say every time we've exceeded 4% inflation, unemployment was below 5%, mm-hmm. then recession comes within 2 years of that moment. And that has happened here in April 2022.
Right.
So they're saying like recession is probably coming, historically speaking.
Yeah. And so there's some tips if you want to prepare for recession. It's not necessarily the end of the world. One thing is because job market is so hot right now, if you've been sitting there thinking like, maybe I'll get a job, go get a job now.
Yeah.
So you don't have to like try to get a job during a recession. You can already have the job. If you're thinking of selling your house, especially if you can downsize, mm-hmm. this is a good time to sell because the housing market is really high right now, but you can expect it to come down if we go into a recession.
Right.
Set a little cash aside if you can.
Sure.
And then if you're an investor, if you have stocks, stick to your plan. Don't panic. Don't worry. Just stay the course.
Yeah.
You can weather a recession. Your stock prices will eventually go back up on the other side.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? There was one thing I meant to mention before that's worth pointing out real quick is that remember we were talking about the Fed sets this rate that banks, you know, they lend each other money and stuff.
Yeah, the federal funds rate.
Yeah, they don't actually say like you have to use this rate. Like banks still negotiate that with each other.
Right.
But they're saying like that's the target rate, and then they do things to try and nudge these banks toward that rate.
Right, and that's what they're doing when they're buying or selling bonds on the market.
Right.
They're injecting or removing cash to make the banks actually charge closer to that target rate they've set. That's how they manipulate.
Right. But it's not like a bank says, well, we can only charge this because the Fed said so.
That's what I'm saying. It'd be so much easier and so much more straightforward if the Fed said, this is what you can charge each other for the overnight rate, and then adjust that rather than setting a target and then manipulating the markets.
Yeah, but then that takes negotiation out of the deal and like
– it's just no fun.
Yeah.
That's probably it actually. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
Well, that was a good first take. Let's start over and try it again. Well, since Chuck's made that sound, of course that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this new gin and tonic recipe. I want to try.
Oh, yeah. It sounds good.
This just came in. Hey, guys. Been listening for a few years down under and was keen to learn about more about champagne. As a fan of the bubbly beverage. But I got an extra treat when you went on a tangent about gin. Mm-hmm. This must have been a select champagne.
Yeah, our champagne one came out this past Saturday in real life.
IRL. So although I must say the best gin in the world now comes from Australia, arguably Tasmania, I'm also a big fan of the St. George terroir. And Chuck, it does not taste like feet. Maybe you should stop soaking your socks, your lime in your socks.
Gross.
So this is a cocktail recipe I'm going to try because it all sounds lovely. And this is from Meg. Just get your basic London dry gin and tonic, but instead of just squirting a lime in there, squeeze some orange in there and add a full rind and then rub a fresh rosemary stick, get that thing activated, and then put that in there and stir it around.
You sound like you're making this listener mail up.
No. And then and cracked pepper. Uh-huh. So you basically got a gin and tonic with orange, rosemary, and black pepper.
Yeah, be careful with the pepper, though. I've had it before with even just not cracked but whole peppercorns.
Ooh.
You can accidentally burn your throat pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the gin, like, gets it ready and the black pepper finishes the job.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try it out. That's from Meg in Australia.
Just remember, a little goes a long way.
Little goes a long way.
Thanks a lot, Meg. We appreciate that. We love new gin recipes, really any kind of recipe.
Yeah.
If you want to get in touch with us like Meg did and give us a recipe or just say hi or whatever, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.